This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Say yes to Pure Leaf tea and free gas for a year only at True North Convenience Stores. When it comes to quality, say yes to the delicious taste of real brewed Pure Leaf tea. True North stores are stocked with your favorite flavors like unsweetened, extra sweet, and raspberry. For a limited time, enter for a chance to win free gas for a year. Check the True Rewards app for details or download the mobile app from the Apple or Google Play stores. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Wow. What's up?
I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
Joining me right now is the head basketball coach at Maryland, Kevin Willard. The Terps Friday afternoon in Seattle against Grand Canyon University in a first round game. Maryland 25-8, a very exciting season. I'm curious, before the bracket came out, you know, it's, you know, last night on CBS, how much of an information junkie you are when it comes to, you know, bracketology and trying to seek out information before you know definitively where you're going?
Yeah, I mean, you know, Kevin, it's a good question, because I think during the year, as the season goes on, I'm really, really into it. I follow it. I explain it to the team. I talk about the different metrics and things like that. But once you get down to, you know, there's not much movement once you get down to Friday and Saturday in the conference tournaments. You know, I thought we were the last three seed, and then when we lost to Michigan, I think we got the first four seed. So I think once you get to that point, you know you're in, and you're just kind of hoping to get the best seed possible.
Do we know that the conference tournaments really don't significantly change much at this point? Because I'm wondering, and maybe you have a thought on this, if we had beaten Michigan and we were playing yesterday, would we have been a three?
You know what? I don't, you know, maybe, but I don't think so. If you look at, you know, Michigan got a five seed, Wisconsin got a
right.
Seed, Michigan beat Wisconsin. So, you know, when you think about the complexities of all the different things that go into the seeding, I think most of the time, and I've been told this by different people that have been on the committee, most of the time the fields usually set the week of conference tournaments. And the only thing that really changes dramatically is the bid stealers, when, like, there's an upset in the conference tournament, someone gets knocked out. But for the most part, when you're seeding 68 teams, that's pretty much done before conference tournament.
Did you have any sort of preference yesterday before CBS laid the whole thing out?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely would have obviously gone to Providence.
Right.
Just because I think we would have got more fans there. But, you know, when you're a three or four seed, you know, you put a really good year of hard work in. We just enjoyed it when it was Seattle. We were excited because obviously we've gone out and played Washington and Oregon. So either way, once you get to that point, it's all about celebrating the fact that you've been an at-large team. That means you've been one of the best teams in the country all year long. You really just want your kids to enjoy it and get ready to get to work.
Is the first moment you know who you're playing and where you're going when CBS puts it up there on the screen?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we had a really nice party yesterday with the team, and I think the biggest thing is making sure that, you know, obviously we're coming off that gut-wrenching loss to Michigan, my biggest thing yesterday was just making sure the guys really enjoyed that moment. And it's a great moment when you see your name pop up there and where you're going to go, who you're going to play. It's what the 7 months of hard work is all about.
Yeah, what I was asking, though, is do you get any information before it comes out? Like, do you get tipped, you guys are a four, you're going to play in Seattle before?
Oh, no.
Okay, geez. You got it. So,
yeah, I mean,
I used to get it just about 20 minutes before, only because I knew a bunch of guys that worked for Westwood One, and they would provide them with the bracket before. But I was sworn to secrecy. But I wasn't sure if that's something that you guys had any information on. So take us through exactly what happens once you know it's Grand Canyon, Seattle. I know there are a lot of moving pieces with travel and the whole thing, but what are you focused on?
Yeah, I mean, so really, the first thing you really do is just logistics. You got to make, I mean, you're not just jumping on a flight and going somewhere. You have your band, the cheerleaders, you have families. So, you know, you really have to sit down and you have to talk to the NCAA and tell them when you want to leave. They tell you your hotel. You got to get all that stuff. So the first kind of couple hours is logistics. That's what I'm doing. I'm working with my staff, my director of basketball operations, and trying to make sure that we get the best logistics to get out there and do it. The staff goes in and starts working on Grand Canyon. The other staff's working on the second round game. And then once I get the logistics done, we got done with that around 8:30 last night. And then the staff and I sat down and we start going through the game plan for Grand Canyon, and we start breaking that down. We did that for a couple hours, and then we got in this morning. We've been doing that, and we're getting ready right now to step into practice.
On the logistics front, I'm just curious, is there there's a designated hotel, or are there choices for hotels? Like, is it a mad dash to get the best accommodations or not?
No, see, that's why I really believe that the seating's done way in advance, the week of, is you get your hotel based on what your seat is.
Okay.
Each city that you go to, the seat is designated from the hotel. So the NCAA sits there and says, okay, you're going to the Hilton because you're the four seed, and the six seed is going to some other hotel. So that's when you really realize the complexities of running the NCAA tournament and everything that goes into it. You know, it's all done based on your seat.
All right. So what can you tell us about Grand Canyon at this point?
Yeah, I mean, they're a good basketball team. You know, they have really good size. You know, for I've been really impressed. Not only are they have good size on the inside, but their guards and wings have good length. They're very good defensively. They get after it. They play fast, but they don't push the tempo crazy. They just shoot very quickly in the half court. They put a lot of pressure on you to guard one-on-one, to guard your guy. Defensively, they'll mix it up a little bit. They played Georgia and Stanford some 2-3 zone. They played a lot of man-to-man. Overall, you know, they don't shoot it great. I would say that's probably the only thing they don't do well. But besides that, everything else, they do really, really well.
Is there a team, once you watch them on film, that you say, they play like this team, let's go, and we played that team, let's go back and look at it?
Yeah, a little bit. But at this time of year, you know, you are who you are a little bit.
Yeah.
Like, you know, we're putting in a little bit different secondary break for them, because they do play defense a little bit like Washington. They play defense a little bit like Wisconsin. So we're going to put a different secondary break in that we had in earlier in the year. But for the most part, you know, right now, just concentrating what we're going to do defensively and really just focus on that right now.
And you did say that part of your staff starts to look at Memphis and Colorado State.
Yeah, right now, me and David Cox are just focused on Grand Canyon. So it's me, David, my video coordinator. Us three are really just diving into Grand Canyon, and we'll spend the first all three days just worrying about Grand Canyon. My other two assistants, one guy has Colorado State, one guy has Memphis. I won't even look at those guys until after the game. So me and David are just focused on Grand Canyon. The other guys are focused on their games, but they're not part of the game plan. Just me and David are part of that.
You know, I meant to ask you when about the logistics, and it's just me being curious about it. But, you know, where do you practice? Does a team like Oregon, who's also playing in Seattle as a conference team, do you guys, is there any sort of, you know, help that they give you or you give that? What kind of camaraderie is there between conference teams playing in the same venue? And the first part of that was just, you know, how do you determine where you're going to practice, or is that the NCAA that does that?
No, I mean, NCAA gives you a time slot. We have our open practice on Thursday. I think it's from 1 to 1:40 that you have to be at. Mm-hmm. But as far as being in Seattle, you know, we're going to practice at Washington on Thursday. So those guys have been great. And the fact that they're in our conference, and Danny's a really great guy. So we'll practice at Washington on Thursday. And then Friday's an early game. So Friday morning will be a ballroom walkthrough. We won't do a regular walkthrough for a 1:30 game.
All right. As far as
Oregon, I probably won't even talk to Dana because they're in a totally different bracket and they're doing, they're probably having the same logistics that we're trying to figure out.
Gotcha. You know, the sports changed a lot in the last, you know, 10 years, 15 years, you know, maybe even and not as long as that. It's become, for many sports fans, a 1 month out of the calendar sport. And that month is March. But you're a part of the journey. And by the way, hardcore fans, and I'm one of them, are kind of watching the journey as well. But how much do you sort of balance this incredible 25 wins that you had, memorable moments? You know, the Illinois-Indiana back-to-back was so much fun. There were different moments during the course of the year, the painful one at home against Michigan State, but certainly a memory. But how do you balance the largesse of 33 games in the journey you've been on with this one-and-done where all the attention is?
Yeah, I mean, that's actually a great question, Kevin, because it's like, I say this all the time, if you don't have a good journey throughout the year, then you don't have a chance to be in this tournament. So the journey is probably most important, because if you're an at-large team, if you get an at-large bid, it really means that you have one of the best 30 game seasons. And we celebrate that. You know, I told the guys that the other day. I mean, when you get a 4 seed, that means you've been one of the best teams all year long. Right now, we have to flip the switch, though. So now it's the second, the way I'm looking at it, it's the second season. So the journey was great. We had a great year. The journey gave us the opportunity to get to this point, and now you have to take advantage of this point. So it's almost like flipping the switch a little bit. It's like, all right, now we worked all year to get better, and right now our main focus is the fact that it's a one-and-done season, and we got to take advantage of the fact that we're in it.
Yeah, it's just interesting because you get judged less on the 33 games by fans and much more about what happens now.
Yes, yeah. And you know what? There's something to it, because if you don't have a good season and you don't get a good seed, it's really hard to advance in March. And so that's kind of where the balance has to be, is the fact, yes, you get judged on March, but the better you do during the season, the better chances you're going to have to win in March. And I think that's kind of where you do get judged that way. But as a coach, you got to make sure that you do everything possible during the season to give you the best opportunity to win in March.
Is this your best team that you've coached anywhere?
No, my 2019-2020 team.
Oh, right.
At Seton Hall, COVID. You know, the COVID year was really, really good. This is probably my second best. I would say by far it's the most fun I've had coaching of any team I've ever had. They are fun to be around. They work hard. They have a great attitude. I enjoy being with each one of these guys on an individual basis, just to talk to them. So it's it's by far, I've had the most fun coaching I've had in my career.
You know what's interesting about that, Kevin? Your COVID team, you guys, I think you shared in the Big East title that year. Is that the year that you shared a Big
we
East?
Did.
Yeah. And Maryland did the same thing in the Big Ten. And you guys, Maryland was going to be either a 2 or a 3 seed. I'm imagining you were going to easily be a top 4 seed, right?
Yeah, we were probably trending towards a 2 or 3 seed. And the,
yep.
the biggest thing was we were going to be in the East region, which that year the Sweet 16 was in Madison Square Garden.
Right.
So it would have been like a home game for us. And I think the same thing was, I think I talked to Turge the next year, and he was the same thing. They were going to get, I forget where their region was, but it was going to be someplace close to here. And it's unfortunate because, you know, the Maryland team, we played them that year. They were really good. They had obviously great guard play. You know, they had Sticks. They had Bruno. They were a team that was built for a long run.
Yeah, they were good that year. They had a point guard in Cowan, and they had Sticks and Wiggins off the bench. Morsell was the defensive player of the year. They were loaded heading into that thing. And I remember your team. I remember you had a couple of big dudes, and you had one tough ass guard. And I'm blanking on his name right now.
Miles Powell.
Powell. Yeah.
We had 2 7-footers that, I mean, we protected the rim at an elite level, and which gave us a chance to be really aggressive on the wing. So we defended the 3 really well. And, I had 6'11", 7 foot, 7 foot. And it was, you know, it was one of those things where we just defensively were so good that we could have beat anybody.
Last one. Just, do you think about the fan base, you know, this Maryland fan base? I don't think you knew it when you got the job. I remember a couple of our first conversations. It is a very passionate fan base. It's a demanding fan base. And, you know, it's a national championship program. You know, Gary won a national championship, went to back-to-back Final Fours. And this team, regardless of the coach, has been to one Sweet 16 over the last 22 years. Do you feel any of that, and the, you know, the added pressure of getting beyond this first weekend?
Yeah, I think you feel that no matter where you are nowadays. I think, you know, I've actually enjoyed this fan base and you know, the way they are. The only thing that I've been trying to do is educate our fan base on the Big Ten. It's right. You know, I think we're still stuck a little bit in the ACC world where, you know, college basketball has changed. I don't think our fan base enjoys how good Big Ten basketball is. You know, the Midwest and really the fan bases out there understand how good the Big Ten basketball is. I think our fans are starting to realize how much fun Big Ten basketball is. And really enjoying it. And I thought the fan base this year, you know, we started off attendance a little slow, but I think once they realized, you know, what type of team this was, how fun they were to watch, you know, to only lose really one game at home, you know, we went 17-2. It shows you how good this fan base is.
You like Maryland? You like the Big Ten? You're going to be here for a while?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the Big Ten is great, Kevin. It's one of those things. I said this yesterday to one of the reporters after the selection came out, was the greatest thing that the Big Ten is, it makes you, you have to be a better coach every day. When you go up against Matt Painter and Tom Izzo, Dana Altman, Nick Cronin, you know, you go down the list of all these guys that are in this league that are so good, you know, Greg Gard at Wisconsin, you know, Dusty's done a phenomenal job at Michigan. We see so many different styles that you have to, you just can't sit there and say, okay, you can't be stubborn and say, I'm going to play this way every day because, you know, that's the way it's going to work. You have to really adapt. And I enjoy Big Ten basketball. I love the challenge. And, you know, Maryland, it's a great program. And I think I love the momentum that we have going right now.
Best of luck. Really hoping for the best. Enjoy it, and hopefully we can talk next week before a Sweet 16 game.
That was great, Kev. I appreciate it.
Kevin Willard, everybody, had that conversation with him yesterday, and, you know, Maryland fans understand this. one Sweet 16, and that was in 2016, over a period going back to the year after the national championship season. So between 2004 and current, just one trip to the Sweet 16 for a program that for a long period of time was pretty much a threat, you know, an even money threat to get to the second weekend almost every season. And so that's a long period of time of March, you know, kind of coming up short. And a lot of the teams that Maryland's had, including some of the teams Gary coached, certainly had a chance and were even favored in some of those second round games to get to the Sweet 16. I don't want to sell anybody short because I'd like a big run to the Final Four and beyond. But I'll tell you what, Denton, it would be a big disappointment if Maryland's not getting ready this time next week for a Sweet 16 game in San Francisco. They'll be favored in whichever, you know, opponent they face in the second round. That's a little bit different than, you know, not every trip have they been favored to get to the Sweet 16. Their last two tournaments where they won first round games over UConn in Turge's final year and against West Virginia 2 years ago in Kevin Willard's first year, they played Alabama, much better team, and they were big underdogs in those second round games. I mean, what would have happened in 2020? Who knows? I think it would have gone well, but they could have also been, you know, one and done by, you know, in a 2-15 game or a 3-14 game. But man, there is a hunger among a lot of us that love Maryland basketball to get back to what really is the highest profile spot, which is getting to that second weekend where there are 16 teams left, 8 games, and you're really in those high profile moments. I think they've got a really good chance to get there. Grand Canyon, Colorado State, or Memphis, if Maryland plays their best, they should be playing and getting ready for a third round Sweet 16 game this time next week. You like them to get to the Sweet 16, right?
I do.
I'm hearing all this stuff about Colorado State. Gotta worry about. How about let's just get by Grand Canyon? Because I'm sure somebody will start ripping off, you know, their sixth man of the year guy. That's my favorite this time of year. You know, all the talk about, oh man, have you seen Omaha's, you know, two guard or point guard, or my God, does Ole Miss have a player, or Yale? I mean, all you got to do is look at, you know, they're big dude. These matchups, you have no idea, especially in these neutral court sterile environments. Anything can happen. But even with that said, would be a big disappointment if they don't win two this weekend. I don't think he's feeling it. You know, he's never been beyond the first weekend at Seton Hall. Plenty of tournament visits. So this would be, if he gets to a Sweet 16, his first as well. All right. Roy Hibbert coming up in 10 minutes. He's been doing a lot of college basketball analyst work. We will talk about the contest that we are putting out there for the tournament when we come back. Kevin Sheehan Show, Team 980 and theteam980.com.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
I'm Jordan Robinson, host of the new podcast, The Women's Hoop Show. Each episode, I'll be joined by a rotating group of women's basketball experts to talk WNBA, college hoops, the new Unrivaled League, and the shifting landscape of the sport. The game is growing, and so are we. Listen to and follow The Women's Hoop Show and Odyssey Podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, Roy Hibbert's coming up in a few minutes. What are we doing for the tournament, Denton?
So we're running something on ESPN. I did that poll yesterday about what is your preferred site for bracket challenges, although I'm pretty sure most normal people do one on every single site. But we threw it up on ESPN. You can find it on our Twitter page at the Team 980. Just a Team 980 showdown. It's going to have all of your favorite voices and personalities on the Team 980, and it's for bragging rights. We are hoping that we can get some sort of good prizes, but 980 is a little handcuffed in the way that we can give out prizes. We're not the big wigs over there at 106.
How do we you go to the ESPN tournament challenge thing?
You go to the ESPN tournament challenge or go to our Twitter page. The link is right there on the Twitter page. It's pinned at the top. So as long as you're following Team 980, you will see it. It's free to join. You can only do one bracket. I don't want nobody doing four brackets. I'm not a four bracket guy. You get one bracket, and then it's for bragging rights. So are they smarter than somebody like you, Chris Russell, Craig Hoffman, me, you know,
definitely.
Everyone? Definitely.
Anybody can win this thing. Yeah, I'm a one bracket guy. That's it.
I think one and a half is the number that I use as someone that went to a mid-major, because I always have one where if Liberty's in it, they win the whole thing, but I go off of one bracket.
Yeah, I used to do this thing where I would just pick four ACC teams, including Maryland, in the Final Four. And in recent years, I'll do four Big Ten teams with Maryland in it. But, yeah, you'll get one bracket. So just go to the Team 980's Twitter page and just link it sitting there at the top to the ESPN Tournament Challenge. And Denton will track the whole thing. And we'll, you know, whoever wins it, we'll put you on the air and we can talk about your bracket at the end.
Yeah, I'm the commissioner / dictator of the bracket challenge. So don't anybody rub me the wrong way.
And you'll be able to see everybody's bracket, right? Our bracket, your bracket, my bracket,
yeah.
Your bracket, Chris's bracket, Craig's bracket, etc.
Everybody's bracket.
Okay. Is Doc going to fill out a bracket?
You are on Doc Patrol. You got to make him fill a bracket out. I don't know. Is he a bracket guy? I don't know if he's a bracket guy.
Doc's so into predictions. He loves doing hypotheticals.
I know the hypothetical is Doc's wheelhouse.
All right. Roy Hibbert will join us next. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980, and the team980.com. All the tournament games, Westwood One's coverage right here on the Team 980. Your home for Maryland basketball's right here. Their game's Friday at 4:35. That'll be a part of all-day coverage of the NCAA tournament. So if you're out and about and you're not able to watch, tune in to the Team 980. It gets underway with the first two games of the first four tonight. And Roy Hibbert joins us right now. Roy, of course, a legend in this town, started at Georgetown Prep and then went through Georgetown and then a long near decade career in the NBA as one of the best defensive centers and certainly one of the best shot blockers in the league. By the way, I was mentioning earlier, Roy's doing excellent work, by the way, as an analyst for CBS Sports and CBS Sports Network. 18 years, Roy, it's been since that Final Four run where you guys beat Carolina in overtime up in East Rutherford, got to the Final Four, played against Greg Oden in Ohio State. Can you believe it's been that long?
I mean, I didn't know it was that long, but it was definitely a fun time. The DMV area was a hotbed of teams during that span of George Mason, obviously Maryland winning something. So it was definitely a good time, a good era right there. Well, but thank you for having me.
Yeah, no, it's great to have you. That was such a big deal, too, because it felt like with JT3, Georgetown was back. You guys were loaded on that team, and obviously you were the anchor defensively. And you had a legit shot. You know, I went and looked this up this morning. I didn't realize this because I remember Ohio State was, I think, you know, they and Florida were maybe the top two ranked teams in the country. You guys were favored in that Final Four game over Ohio State. I didn't remember that. Did you?
I did not know that, but the referees definitely called it pretty tight for myself and Greg, so we kind of neutralized each other sitting on the bench, but definitely would have, definitely with my knowledge now of the game, definitely would have approached it a little bit differently and hopefully had a different outcome.
Well, you still had 19-6 in just 24 minutes because of the foul trouble. So not a bad game. So, all right. So first of all, you've been doing some, you know, analyst work here for a few years. Are you enjoying it?
Oh, yeah. I love breaking down the games, seeing tendencies, just watching these young men just develop over these years. You know, it's definitely a different era in terms of NIL and then obviously the transfer portal and then these fifth, sixth, seventh-year players and everything like that. But it's definitely a fun era of a good basketball is being played.
So there seems to be a sense, you know, in listening to a lot of people talk about it, that there may be some separation at the top with Duke, Houston, and Florida, and maybe Auburn as well, the four ones. Do you see it that way?
Man, Florida, the way how they play, they're so long and athletic. You know, Condon, Chinlelu, just the way how I think about when they, the SEC, just going through that gauntlet every night. You know, they had 14 teams. The way how Florida defended the ball screens with Ziegler and Mark Sears, Tennessee and Alabama, this the way how they just put the size on those guards. They're figuring things out. You know, Walter Clayton and Will Richard, they can get up and down. They can shoot really well. So I like them. You know, Duke on one hand, and stop me if you ever want me to stop. But with
no,
Duke,
keep going.
Obviously, it depends on if Flag is able to go. Knipple and Malawach, they've been growing all season as freshmen. And obviously, I always want to know during this run with Duke, how are they going to do when they were like tight? You know, their margin of victory was just so large over the past couple of games, and the ACC hasn't been where it used to be in terms of strength. But those freshmen handled themselves pretty well during that stretch. But obviously, once the big fella gets back, I would love to see how they do. But they've never been in that situation before. But I think that they're well on their way. I actually have Kentucky, you know, as a team that can make it there, but we'll talk about Kentucky. But Auburn, to me, seems like it's lost a little bit of its aura or luster, you know, losing the last three out of four. Jani Broome does a lot of heavy lifting for that team in terms of the past couple games. Chad Baker-Mazzara, I think, needs to get a little bit more in tune with it offensively.
What do you like? I love watching Kelvin Sampson coach teams just to begin with, because they just tend to have a lot of grown men on those Houston teams that really get after you defensively. Can they score enough to win six in a row?
I mean, you know, in the tournament, it's all about momentum. And as good as they are on defense, the number in the play that I see is like an X factor is Emmanuel Sharpe. This man, I've seen, he shoots around 40% from the three-point line. The offense is there. He can score inside the paint in terms of the mid-range. But like, I see guys going under him on ball screens, and he's just making them pay. So hopefully they have that extra push, barring any injuries. I know they have a little bit of an ankle. I think three out of the four number one seeds have ankle injuries in terms of some of their key players and sort of key players.
We'll come back to kind of the field, you know, overall and who you like to be there in San Antonio at the end. How much of Maryland have you watched, and what kind of chance do you give to them to make a deep run?
Well, you know, Maryland, I love. I just want to rewind it back to that championship game against the Big Ten, and I was up on my seat. You know, when I went into Georgetown, we used to have a rivalry with Grievous Vasquez. Jeff Green and myself would go go play pickup with those Maryland guys.
They
would get
very, were right down the street.
Physical.
Yeah.
James Gist was a PG County Maryland legend right there. So it'd definitely be physical. But I was actually really happy to see what Maryland does. Reese and the big fella, Queen, they have like such a good 1-2 punch, like high post area, low post. Reese has really good post moves over the left, right, and shoulder. And I mean, you guys have a good squad now. Grand Canyon, they're a good team that can get up and down the court. You know, this is a game that Maryland should win. Interior passing team that does a good job of like getting to the foul line, drawing fouls, getting a lot of and ones. So, you know, that's something that Maryland may need to, like, watch out for, just in case of the bigs off of dribble penetration, not picking up any ticky-tack fouls like I did against Ohio State so long ago. But I expect them to win that game. Go on Memphis or Colorado. I honestly feel that Colorado has a chance. I know not many people have probably seen them play, but they have an NBA-quality guy, broad shoulders, Neat Clifford. He's been on a tear lately. He can give you 20, 30 points, you know, play good defense, run the court. He is the head of the snake. He does a lot of the heavy lifting. But with this momentum in the tournament, you know, you never know what could happen. But I could see a really good game where Maryland could, you know, if they can neutralize, keep him under his average, keep everybody else down, they can make it to the second weekend.
By the way, when you were in high school, and I watched you play several times in high school prep, you guys would have never played Montrose, right? I mean, you guys, I think pretty much the area avoided playing Montrose, Christian, because you mentioned Gravis, and obviously Durant played there as well. But you didn't play them, right?
I mean, we would take on any oncomers on any tournaments. We went to Slam Dunk at the Beach. We played Oak Hill. They had Rondo, Josh Smith, a great team. Well, we would see those guys like the Massa and those powerhouses during the summer leagues and stuff, and definitely hope that we'd have our whole team with us. But with the summer league, but I would have no problems.
Yeah, I mean, I just think about, you know, where Montrose was. There was a lot of talent in two places about a mile apart from one another back in the day. Roy Hibbert.
Maybe may not be a Montrose thing, but during the tournament, I was talking to a dear friend of mine, Ty Lawson, UNC legend. I'm texting him. He is so lucky their team got into the tournament, even after that line step and everything like that. But no, it was a hotbed of great talent in the DMV area.
Yeah, always has been. So what did you think? Did you think, I mean, West Virginia and Indiana clearly numbers-wise deserved it more than Carolina?
I think so. You know, when they have 13 cracks number one chance. You know, and then obviously the conspiracy with the AD and stuff like that. But I don't think they deserve to be in there. But let's just see if they could, you know, have one more crack at it and prove us wrong and prove America wrong. Because my guy John Rothstein was flabbergasted when he saw that.
Yeah, I was watching you guys that night. Roy Hibbert doing a lot of really good work, analyst work for CBS Sports Network. All right, so give me a couple of teams, not necessarily way off the grid, but maybe teams that aren't a top two seed in a region. So three seeded and below that you like to make a Final Four run, if not a national championship run. You did mention Kentucky.
So I mentioned Kentucky. Let me say, like, potential, if you have time, but two potential teams before I get to the Final Four team.
Sure.
A team that can go on a run. Sleeper teams I hope your audience can look out for is Utah State. They play in a very tough Mountain West. They have two guys, Mason Fowleslev and Ian Martinez, who can
light
it up.
Ian Martinez played at Maryland. Yeah,
yeah.
He transferred.
Like, good players. Yeah. Good. They have a deep bench, too. And then the next team I would tell your audience to listen to and just take a look at is that Drake. Bennett Sturts, he is a type of player that could have an Oakland slash like Jack Golkey type of run. He takes shots that are unconventional that can, you know, definitely light up the charts and basically go on runs. So he's definitely a threat, and they have a good bench with Banks and Howard. So those are two not Cinderella-esque teams, but those are some teams right there. But Kentucky, I'm so impressed with, you said two of them, but Kentucky, you know, just in that one-year turnaround, just to be able to what Mark Pope is doing with that team has been great. I mean, they get up and down. They actually defend pretty well, and they pass, and they have, like, good senior leadership with obviously Kobe Bryant being at Dayton last year, who made a good little bit of a run. But Butler, Lamont Butler, who went to San Diego State, who has, you know, who's a good two-way player who defends. So obviously when you have players that have had Final Four experience and deep run experience is good. Let me see who else is here. I can't talk St. John's. They're number two. I mean, Missouri, you know, the SEC teams, you know, you can never – I say Missouri.
Yeah, you like Missouri? Yeah, there's
like
six.
I was about to say Arkansas, but the, you know, just I don't know how they would do. I think they Arkansas gets past Kansas, but I would love to see what they do against St. John's. And you know, you never know what those young guns could do once they get running.
Is there a team, Roy, that people have high expectations for that you think will come up, you know, far short of expectations? You kind of mentioned Auburn a little bit. I'm curious if you think they're a Final Four team or not.
I mean, I have them in my Final Four, but I feel like they have the hardest gauntlet to go. I mean, if Louisville, Creighton, I like Cockbrenner and Ashworth. You know, they are like fifth-year guys that have basically, Ashworth is, but Cockbrenner is a defensive player, a four-time defensive, Big East defensive player of the year. Michigan played well. I was saying if Maryland did not have that little gaffe at the end of the game where they let the point guard who inbound the ball get to the basket,
yeah,
you know, I'd feel really, you know, really good about Maryland. But you know, Michigan is tricky right there, and they also have a good Marquette in New Mexico and Michigan State. So that's you know, with the luster losing three out of four, Michigan State, man, they don't even need to run offense. As soon as the ball gets off the rim, they're out. Chase Richardson's out. They're getting lobs. They live in transition. So I feel like Auburn has the toughest road. And with that lack of momentum towards the end of the season, that gives me a little reason to be wary.
Yeah, Michigan State doesn't play exactly the way you guys played in college.
When you were at
Georgetown, they take made shots and run off of all of them. What do you think, as a big guy yourself, what do you think of the two Michigan big guys, Wolf and Golden?
Oh, Golden and Wolf. I mean, the fact that Wolf can step out and takes maybe like four threes a game, but he can make two, it gives Golden, Big Vlad, like enough room to go. He's so skilled in the paint, so big and strong. It's those two guys complement each other really well, because and Wolf could actually put it on the ground from the top of the key and get to the basket too. So I mean, they're a dangerous team, and Michigan turning it around so quickly. You know, kudos to them.
Yeah, I'm curious, because this is going back to last year, but he's actually played really well in his rookie year in the NBA. Did you think that Zach Edey would make the transition to the NBA the way he has? He's able to guard better than we thought he would be able to guard. He's got more range than we thought. What did you think of him going from Purdue to the NBA?
So I will say this. I was initially skeptical at first, and seeing like if he can move his feet. I remember during the championship game last year, I think Donovan Clingan had come out the game, and then I think he took a little bit of a deep breath because there wasn't a big guy on his level. And I think Hassan Diarra, got out on the break and got like one lob dunk, and another tip in off a pick and roll. And I was saying to myself, that little instance right there made me waver. And then his lack of being able to see him as many games in the summer league, you know, and I actually made a YouTube video on my YouTube channel about this, and I was actually wrong. He is up on the drop screens. He's his team allows him to switch. He covers ground. He corrals the ball handler off those screens. And he's doing way better than I thought he would on the defensive end, because I didn't have an issue with him on offense. He's always a lob threat, from the beginning of the shot clock to the end of the shot clock. So seeing his development has been good. I honestly say I made a mistake. I didn't think his game would translate, you know, well to the NBA. I thought maybe not Taco Fall. What better than Taco Fall, but I'm happy with his development.
All right, I got 30 seconds. So give me the championship pick and the winner, the championship matchup and the winner.
All right, so I would say Florida versus probably Houston, and I have Florida winning. I feel like they have the length, the athleticism, and I think they get it done.
You're doing a great job on TV. Really appreciate the time. At @Roy_Meets_World on X and on Twitter. Really appreciate the time. Maybe we can catch up before the Final Four.
Appreciate it. Hope you guys have a good day.
Roy Hibbert, everybody. Thanks to him. Thanks to Kevin Willard. We are done for the day. Back tomorrow. Chris is up next.